I'm going to call to order the Ways and Means Committee hearing for May 4th. It's a little chaotic here at the Capitol. My apologies for the delay in getting started. We have the Tax Committee meeting. The Rules Committee was supposed to be meeting. Now they're reconvening, I guess, at 9:15, I believe. We have members in different committees, so we'll try and work our way through the agenda the best we can, but we may have to recess to allow members to come to vote. Just a warning, as far as protocol in House committee meetings, we ask that there be no cheering, clapping. If there is, the Sergeant-at-Arms will ask you to leave the committee hearing room. The Ways and Means Committee considers the fiscal elements of the bills on the agenda. And so we'll start. I saw Representative Gottwalt was here. So we will start with his bill, which is House File 1613. Members, in your packet, you'll see there's a pretty standard fiscal note relative to constitutional amendments with the $2,000 fiscal impact. Representative Gottwalt, if you briefly want to explain your bill as soon as we have a quorum, we'll officially call the meeting to order, and I will move your bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I realize you can't move the bill just yet without the quorum, but the bill you have before you places on the 2012 general election ballot a question to be put before Minnesota voters. Shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to provide that only a union of one man and one woman shall be valid or recognized as a marriage in Minnesota? And members, I believe in your packet, as Chair Holberg mentioned, is a fiscal note regarding this question being placed on the ballot. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
All right, members, are there any questions on the fiscal note? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, my question is more a procedural one, and of you, Madam Chair, and or the author. Constitutional amendments can't be put on the ballot until 2012, and we have a $5 billion budget problem before us, and the clock is running. And essentially my question is why we're taking and I'm asking this question, I guess we still have, even after the first one is pulled, three constitutional amendments up tonight. And we are in session next year, and so why are we the first year of the biennium taking up constitutional amendments when we have such a huge budgetary problem before us in roughly 3 weeks or less to get the books balanced?
And Representative Carlson, the decision on that was made at a pay grade higher than mine. It is a deadline week, and we're working through some of these policy things. As you know, conference committees are also meeting, other committees are meeting, and so we continue to do other work as well.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, and that's partially my point when you mentioned the conference committees are meeting, and unless something's happened in the last few hours, they don't even have their targets yet. And we really have two issues. The conference committees now, and as I've pointed out before, we have a $5 billion problem currently, and as the House budget at least is structured and in conference committee in 14 and 15, we have a $3.5 billion problem that remains. And here we are taking up three constitutional amendments that can't even be voted on until 2012, and we are in session next year. And if it's above your pay grade, I think you probably should raise that question then with the leadership in terms of what the agenda for the last 3 weeks should be. And I don't think it should be this whole laundry list of not only constitutional amendments, but there's a, well, I guess this is a repeat, the one on the voting. That one we passed, what was it, two nights ago as a statutory change, and now we got it before us as a constitutional amendment. And I'm just concerned. This is a fiscal committee that is bringing up a lot of time when we should be dealing with the state budget problem. But I'll stop there, Madam Chair, unless you want to comment further.
I don't. I think we can discuss the fiscal note here. Representative Vatwald.
Well, Madam Chair, and just in response to Representative Carlson, I think it's clear we are focused like a laser beam on the budget. We met today with the governor's staff on the Health and Human Services side, for example, extensively about our budget situation, and we are focused on that as our top priority, that and creating a better jobs environment in our state. We inherited a $5 billion overspending problem in the state, and we're working diligently to correct that, and I think we can do both. We do a lot of finance bills in this legislature, Representative Carlson, as you know, and we also do a lot of policy bills. We also want to give Minnesotans time to talk about this, and I think that's fair to them. And so doing it this year, I think, is important.
Madam Chair, I guess I would have a question then, being that I raised the question of the budget this year. Do you have a target yet for Health and Human Services?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, that's also above my pay grade.
Okay, that's the very point. These conference committees are meeting. They don't have a target, and here we're taking up constitutional amendments. All of them controversial, and taking up other legislation as well. When we, it won't even kick in until next year, in terms of when the voters, or 2012, when the voters would have an opportunity to even vote on them. And Madam Chair, I'm not just raising that question with you, seeing my good friend here, Chair of the Tax Committee, Mr. Davids, Representative Davids. I raised the same series of questions with him on issues before his committee as well, because I would like to be focused on getting the budget balanced. And it should not be these amendments and so on that shouldn't even be before us until next year. But as I indicated earlier, I'll stop here, and I've made my point that it should be the budget that we're focusing on in these last few days.
Thank you. Representative Carlson, are there any questions on the fiscal note? Representative Kahn.
Well, I guess, the author of the bill pointed out that we're also looking at jobs and a better business climate and that kind of thing. And we're also looking at, I guess I'm concerned, sometimes when constitutional amendments come, they have a large amount of statutory language that is also used to implement it. And I notice that this one doesn't have any. But as I read it, I find it fairly confusing. For example, when I read only a union of one man and one woman shall be valid, what does that have to do about sequential marriages? For example, does this void our no-fault divorce statutes? And I think if it does, you know, that if you won't, it doesn't say that only a union of one man and one woman at one time or something. It kind of, as I read it, one implication could clearly be that that's it. You have one union of one man, and then that means that anything else that we've done in statute that disrupts that is, so I guess the author, I should ask that of the author, is that a possible interpretation of this, and if not, why isn't it? If how can you have a second union of a man with another woman, if this is what the Constitution... Remember, it's not a statute that we can interpret. This is what the Constitution says. Can you explain that to me?
Representative Gottwald.
It doesn't bother me, because that's actually how I've lived my life. But, you know, I imagine it would bother a lot of... I know it would bother a lot of other people who have been in the legislature at various times, from both parties.
And we do have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting to order. I will move House File 1613 and recommend it be passed to refer to the General Register. Representative Gottwald.
Well, thank you,
I'm sorry, it's going to rules. Thank you for the clarification. Representative Gottwald, if you'd like to address Representative Kahn's question.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, I appreciate the question. I would simply point out this language that is before you has passed in 31 other states.
Well,
and I would also point out, Madam Chair, I believe we're in the Ways and Means Committee, and the discussion is, I believe, focused on the fiscal implications, yeah, especially around the fiscal note.
Well, Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I actually carried the no-fault divorce. It was one of, because I carried it actually in my first term, and because they couldn't find any lawyers who were willing to do it at that time. But one of the things that we talked about was the big fiscal implications of that. There are large fiscal implications when you know, when you mess up everything that's going on. I mean, at that point, we were changing everything that was going on in the divorce courts, because it had, and it had a very positive fiscal, it had a positive fiscal note, in that divorces would be much easier, would take up much less judicial time, and that sort of thing. So if we go back on that, it seems to me that that messes it up, and that it puts, so I would, and that it would be, this were to pass, we would have a lot more problems in the courts. And so I just want to know, and I've said, usually with most constitutional amendments that I've been aware of, like the last one, the legacy one, and certainly the environmental trust one, they came along with a large amount of statutory implementing language, and this doesn't have any. And shouldn't we have something that says that we're not to take this literally, that we're not, we don't believe that only a union of one man and one woman is true, that we can have multiple ones as long as they happen one at a time, or, you know, so you know, so I guess it's your bill, so I'm asking that.
Representative Kahn, current law in Minnesota prohibits polygamy. I don't think we need additional statutory language. It's kind of a civil law.
I was talking
anyway.
Well, what this says, this implies to me, and unless he had statutory language which says that's not what it means, that you have a union of one man and one woman, and that's the only one that's valid or recognized as a marriage in Minnesota. So you can't have a situation, I don't know if you can have a situation where one dies and then you can also have a remarriage that's then a second woman or a second man, or if you could have a divorce and there could be two more put in there. I think that that then becomes terrible confusion for the courts. So I'm just said usually, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a constitutional amendment that had this little statutory language along with it. So I'm trying to get what the interpretation is. The interpretation is that you don't intend to prohibit these other things, then why don't you specifically state it?
I guess the author doesn't think it's necessary, Representative Kahn. Are there any questions on the fiscal note? Representative Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Gutwall, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I'm looking at the back where it talks about local government costs and estimates the cost that county auditors and others are going to have to potentially adhere to. And can you tell me how counties and local municipalities are going to cover this cost, especially in light of the fact that we are, if the majority's thoughts go will become law, that we will cut local government aid? Can you tell me how counties are going to bear this cost?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, as I understand, I mean, these are the typical costs that would be involved if you put any question on a ballot. I think if you talk to city clerks and county administration who are responsible for this, they should not find this surprising. In fact, if you take this statewide across 87 counties, I believe the number is $104,000. There is no doubt there is some cost there, but this is part of the cost of operating a democracy when you put a question on a ballot.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Follow-up. And I think, Representative Gawad, that you didn't quite answer my question. And so I understand that whenever we do any work, be it local municipalities, that there's going to be some cost associated with it. And so I definitely understand that. But my specific question to you was, and remains, how are counties going to bear these particular costs? And I guess I should also ask, did you talk to any of the counties to ask them whether these costs could be borne by them, especially in light of the fact that the state is cutting local government aid?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Champion, obviously this money is a cost to cities or counties that comes from the general fund. I served on a city council for 9 years, so I apologize if I didn't answer that directly beforehand. As to the relative impacts of local government aid, I think that's going a bit far afield, frankly.
All right, thank you. Representative Kahn.
just a clarification of one of your answers. Do 31 states have this in their state constitution?
Representative Gatwell.
Madam Chair, I understand this is the language that was approved in 31 states. I could be corrected if you have different information, Representative Kahn.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
My specific question was going to the difference of having it in statute and having it in the Constitution. Is that the, and because the point is, if they have it in statute and they have other statutes that deal with divorce and remarriage and that sort of thing, then you just have equivalent statutes, so there's no problem. There isn't any conflict and there isn't anything. But if we put this in our Constitution, is there any other state that has this in their Constitution, is my question. I have no idea. I'm just asking you.
Well, the answer is yes, Madam Chair.
Oh, what? Which?
Representative Kahn, what are you asking? How many
states have this language in their constitution or similar language or whatever?
I believe
in their constitution,
31.
Not statute. 31?
Yes.
31.
Constitutional
amendment? Yes.
There are 31 in their constitution. Is that
this
true?
This or very similar languages have gone on the ballot in 31 states and passed.
But that's not the same because many states can pass statutes by ballot. I want to know how many states have put this in their constitution and what the effect of doing that
31
is.
31 have okay. constitutional amendments defining marriage between one man and one woman. Representative Wagenius, do you have a question on the fiscal note?
I am just thinking about court challenges here and how one pays for court challenges. So let me pose the question to you this way. I go to a church that performs marriages for one man and one woman, and for one woman and one woman, and for one man and one man. So how does your, well, let me put it another way. It looks like your constitutional amendment is interfering with my church. And we have an establishment clause. I don't even necessarily want to go there, but you are interfering with many congregations in this state who are just like my church, that are open and affirming. How can you do that?
Mike. Representative Wagenius, if you don't talk into the microphone, the people can't hear you.
Well, I was talking in the microphone.
No, okay. Talk louder in the microphone.
Okay. Perhaps Representative Gottwald understood what I was saying, that I belong to a church that performs marriages between one man and one woman, and one woman and one woman, and one man and one man. You are interfering with my church and many others like it. And maybe just not churches, perhaps synagogues and other congregations too, but mine happens to be a church. How can you do that?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, we may be misunderstanding here. If you read the bill before you, this says that an amendment will be placed on the ballot, which means that Minnesotans will have the opportunity to decide this. And in fact, we have heard from Minnesotans in large numbers who say they want the opportunity to decide this, and not politicians like myself or the courts. This matter is serious enough that they want the opportunity to vote on this. So, Madam Chair, I won't take that as impugning my motive, but I'm not doing anything but putting a question before the voters of Minnesota if this bill succeeds.
And if I might have the pages go get Representative Lonchesky, we're going to move to a vote here pretty quick. Representative Breinhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gottwald, just in terms of the statement you most immediately made about voters requesting this be placed on the ballot, then Do you think that that means all matters of the most serious import ought to be a subject of direct democracy as opposed to representative democracy?
Representative Breinhart. Representative
Gottwald. Well, Madam Chair, Representative Breinhart, I would point this out. This issue has been around the state legislature a long time. And we have seen action by legislators and by courts to redefine what most recognize as a cornerstone of society. And Minnesotans have indicated, there are polls showing over 70% of Minnesotans have said they want the opportunity to vote on this. I don't know about other matters or other matters that might go before them to put on a constitutional amendment. But this one, they've indicated they would like a chance to vote on, and the bill before you gives them the opportunity to do that.
Representative Breinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I recognize we don't have time to go into a whole constitutional law sort of discussion here, but I think you're missing the intent of my question, and that is, the way you are speaking to this issue leads me to believe that you are saying we are a government of direct democracy as opposed to a representative democracy. Simply because voters ask to have a matter put on the ballot does not mean that our form of government would obligate us to do so, or even make it in our best interest in terms of the relationship between majority and minority rights in the limited government that we have. So putting things on the ballot may not be the right response to that voter demand.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Breiner, just briefly, in Minnesota's history, we've had hundreds of proposed constitutional amendments, of which I believe somewhere around half have succeeded. And so this is not without precedent. And nor do I think it implies that we are saying that we should do everything through constitutional amendment. But clearly there have been questions put before Minnesota voters down through the years in the state's history. And again, when the people decide, they do not always decide to put it in the Constitution. Sometimes they do vote no. And again, I think that goes to my original response, and that's that Minnesota voters have asked for the opportunity to vote on this question at this time.
Representative Wagenius, I'm sorry if you had a follow-up and I wasn't aware of it. My apologies for that. And members, this bill did have a full hearing in the Civil Law Committee. We're here to discuss the fiscal note on the bill, and we've got quite a long agenda as well. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just am looking forward, not forward. I'm looking at the possibility of many legal challenges and how much your bill is going to cost the state in terms of legal challenges. Because what I see you doing is establishing a doctrine that's contrary to some religions in this state. So
Representative Wagenius, you might want to move the microphone. There you go.
Okay. So are you anticipating adding to your fiscal note? I mean, common sense says we are going to have challenges to this. Are you anticipating adding attorneys?
Representative Wagenius, you know that Representative Gottwald doesn't add to fiscal notes, and that's the cost to the state, and this is of putting it on the ballot. And so I don't even know that that's a fair question.
Madam Chair, I think it's wise of us to look forward to the consequences of what we do. One of the consequences of what we're getting ready to do here is to cost the state money. And it's beyond the cost of putting it on the ballot. I've made the point. That's enough.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I want to make 2 points, and you indicated you wanted to go to a vote fairly soon. But the first point is a follow-up to Representative Champion's point about the cost, $104,000. I'd just like to remind members of the committee that we have three amendments before us, and we did have a fourth. You know, and if we would have had all four of them before us tonight, if they were all four favorably acted upon, then we're getting close to a half million. in terms of the cost of constitutional amendments, and it's my understanding that there's others in the pipeline that may ultimately potentially come before this committee as well. So I just wanted to point out that the cost is more when you look at the aggregate total of these constitutional amendments than just this single one. But before we vote, just a quick comment on what's before us. You know, when you look at the U.S. Constitution, when you look at the Constitution of the State of Minnesota, they're about protecting rights and not restricting rights, and we're putting something into the Constitution, and that becomes the highest law of the land, or in this case, of the state. And it would be a proposal to restrict rights, and I find that particularly problematic when we start dealing with the Constitution. And I'm going to probably give the same speech for the next two constitutional amendments as well, but you just simply are reversing the history of both our constitutions when you start talking about restricting people's rights and putting it into the Constitution.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative
Westrom. I'd encourage a no vote, by the way.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, real briefly, to Representative Wagenius's issue. Representative Wagenius, the scenario that you say your church performs these marriages, it's already in our statutes against the law, and we recognize one marriage between one man and one woman. So I just want committee members to remember that, because it's already in our state law. I don't see the legal challenge issue as you've laid it out.
Representative Wagenius.
My church doesn't perform civil unions, only marriages.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just wanted to respond to Representative Gottwald's statement that this is just simply something we're putting before the voters. It's much more than that. I think it's a statement that Minnesota is going down a road that is not... We have other states, by the way, that are that do respect marriage among women and women, men and men. It's a fundamental reflection of a commitment of two people in a loving lifetime relationship. This is fundamentally about relationships, members. And like Representative Carlson, I don't think that interfering or defining a relationship rises to a constitutional question. And so, members, I also strongly, on the bottom of my heart, ask for a no vote. This doesn't rise to that. We don't want to be in the business of regulating loving, committed relationships. And finally, as Representative Carlson said, this is a budget issue. We have a $5 billion deficit. We've heard bill after bill with cut after cut after cut. And now, before we've even defined what the budget is, we're defining what marriage is. It's wrong. And members, please vote no.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I will renew my motion that House File 1613 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
No.
Motion's adopted. The bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Is Representative Erickson in the room? You know, members, we're going to take a recess until the room's cleared. The committee's in recess. All right, we're going to reconvene the committee hearing. Representative Downey will move approval of the minutes from the May 2nd meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes from May 2nd? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendments are approved. As distributed. The next bill on the calendar is House File 1381. Representative Erickson Welcome to the committee. I will move your bill be recommended to pass and referred to the general register, is my understanding. And we have a fiscal note in our packet and also three amendments of what I understand. One is yours and two belong to Representative Eakin. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. That is correct.
All right. And the A31 amendment is yours. Would you like to do that to get the bill in the shape you'd like to discuss it, or how would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A31 amendment is just some cleanup language that is needed for page 28 of the bill in dealing with some adequate yearly progress and other data. And on page 30, the deletion of lines 20 through 26, that would bring an additional cost to this bill that I'm not ready to bear. On line 27, the deletion of section 51, which would be on page 54. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I just received these amendments. Section page 54, line 27, section 51. This is also to avoid an additional cost. And on page 59, some technical corrections. So, Madam Chair, those are the changes in House File 1381, the A31 amendment, mostly to avoid additional cost.
And Representative Erickson, we can certainly move your amendment, but it's my understanding that the amendment will actually change numbers on the fiscal note that we have. Is that correct?
I think I need Mr. Crow here to help me.
All right, thank you. In the meantime, members, if we might, let's adopt the A31 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author. I'm sorry, Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm looking at the A31 amendment compared to the bill itself, and looking specifically on line 7 of the amendment and cross-referencing, and maybe it's here, and I'm just looking at it too quickly, but cross-referencing it with the bill, I don't believe I see on page 59, line 26, the words, the correction, to delete. So I'm wondering, is this amendment drafted to the correct engrossment, or?
Well, Representative Biskins, we do have the second engrossment in front of us.
So obviously then, Madam Chair, there's something wrong with this amendment pointing us to a different...
Madam Chair, I think it's drawn to the wrong engrossment. We're checking right now.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Crow, welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Greg Crow. I'm the fiscal analyst for Education Finance. The correction should be on page 60... I'm sorry, I thought I had it on.
I believe it's page 63, line 35.
Madam Chair, 64, not to disagree with you, but line 64.
Mr. Crow, you're not disagreeing with me. You're disagreeing with your boss. So.
Well, then I'm fine with it, Madam Chair. Mr. Marks is wrong. I don't have to say that. Page 64, line 18.
Okay.
The correction in not the original language, but the new language where it says playground safety inspections, and that should say the repair of unsafe outdoor playground. That's what the amendment does. And the fiscal note has a $1.5 million of costs for correction of playground equipment. And the department has stated that if it says repair, that would reflect current practice in the health and safety program and would not incur an additional levy cost. So the fiscal note, I think it's page 2 or 3, there's a reference to this section and discussion of the playground equipment cost, and that $1.5 million would be removed with the amendment on line 17. So the amendment would be amended to say page 64, line 18.
All right. Members, we're going to need to amend the amendment. So on line 7 of the A31 amendment, delete 59, insert 64. Delete 26, insert 18. Any questions on that? I would be happy to incorporate that into the A31 amendment. And then I would ask if there's no questions. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Representative Erickson or Mr. Crow, I'm concerned about, well, I'm sorry that this amendment is taking out the tiered licensure. I thought that was a improvement to the bill, but my question is on line 1.5 regarding the changes on page 30, taking out lines 20 to 26. Let's see. And I'm wondering how much that costs. You mentioned, Representative Erickson, that you're taking this out because of it costing more money.
Madam Chair,
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Greiling. In my conversations with the Executive Director of the Board of Teaching, Karen Ballmer, they had to have all or nothing in regard to the tiered licensure, and that was not something that I had planned for the finance chair. So at this time, it's not going to be included unless we can work out something later. So I wanted to keep it in too, but it's an all or nothing with the Board of Teaching, and therefore I can't have part of it in and not all of it in. So the cost of the tax of the task force would be an additional cost.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Any other questions on the A31 amendment as amendment? If not, I'll renew my motion that the A31 amendment as amended be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson, I don't know if you want to explain your bill or if you want. There's also two amendments that in the packet, I believe, that Representative Eakin brought to the committee.
Madam Chair and Committee, this is the Omnibus Education Reform Bill, and it begins in Article 1 with technical changes for general education spending. They're not related to spending, but it is how the department conducts its books. Article 2 is educational excellence. It is in this section that we have the cost that's being borne in the finance bill. That is for the third grade reading literacy section. With stopping of social promotion and other programs that have been added or changes that have been made. In Article 3, special programs, Article 4, facilities and technology, Article 5, some accounting changes. A lot of this is asked for by the Department of Education. This was the department bill, which I used as my vehicle for the omnibus bill. Early childhood education, some changes there that would require a report to be done through what used to be Reading Corps and now is Serve Minnesota Innovation instead of the Department of Education in their early childhood division doing a duplicative report. They have asked that language be stricken and placed in a section of the bill where Serve Minnesota Innovation has been doing that report. And then finally, a technical change to student transportation.
All right, members, are there any questions on the bill as it is before us?
Madam Chair.
Representative Carlson.
I wonder if perhaps the author could expand a bit on the third grade retention and just how that would work. It's my understanding that you have to have certain reading level before you would advance to the next grade level, and how that would work, and what happens if after the child is retained and they're still not achieving the third grade reading level.
And Representative Erickson, if you might direct that the members of the committee to where that is in your bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. On page beginning on page 17.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Section 7, thank you, Madam Chair and members. The first part of Representative Myra's proposal in the policy reform bill has to do with the creation of local literacy plans for school districts. It is not a guarantee that districts will be able to meet the needs that are required in here, and that's proficiency in reading by third grade. But it's going to be an excellent tool for districts to use as they, as teachers grades K through 3 are able to diagnose those children whose reading skills are not reaching that grade level. And so built into the literacy plan are some suggestions for the district's assessment suggestions, a recommendation, you know, that there is frequent assessing, for example, September and May, periodically through the school year, that the teachers are going to be checking the needs of their students in reading and whether they are growing toward proficiency. And some other suggestions for the literacy plan, and certainly an emphasis on the fact that in law, beginning in 2009 and 2010, there is a requirement that in our teacher education programs, teachers who are going to be teaching reading will be focusing on an intense, comprehensive, scientifically based reading instruction strategy that consists of 5 areas: phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. And that is a very important piece to be restated in this section of the reform bill, because it reminds all of us that there are specific ways to address needs of our children in reading, and using these 5 strategies is going to be very helpful to the teacher, to the student, and to the parents. Then, as Representative Carlson questioned, there are definitely some safety nets for children, but if they do not fall into one of those safety net areas, for example, have an educational learning plan or an individual educational plan, and do not speak English, they will be retained if, after a meeting with the parents, and I'll refer you to page 19. Oh, page 18, line 30, thank you. So page 18, line 30, this is the first time I've seen this in Grossman, so I apologize. The parent of a student who is not reading at grade level at the end of grade 3 and does not qualify for a good cause exception may ask to meet with a school administrator, the student's classroom teacher, and other qualified school professionals, such as the school's reading teacher or school counselor, to consider whether to promote the student to grade 4 or retain the student in grade 3. A school site or charter school must comply with the parent's meeting request in a timely manner and before the end of the current school year. If after the meeting the parent objects to retaining the student, the parent must sign a school form stating that the parent opposes retaining the student and understands the educational risks of promoting a grade 3 student to grade 4 who is not grade level reading proficient, and the school site or charter school must promote the otherwise qualified student to grade 4. So we've tried to build in parent involvement. In fact, 10 times within this proposal, parents are listed as being key players in the education of their children in the area of reading.
Thank you, so Representative Erickson and Representative Carlson. Again, it's a finance committee. And
well, Madam Chair, let me point something out. When you start talking about retaining students, it's a cost. So that is a cost-related issue. It isn't my paramount issue here,
right,
because you know, we all understand that it's important that a child learn to read. So, I mean, that isn't the argument. I was just trying to get an understanding how it works. But if you retain them for a year, you're picking up additional costs. And there are other things that are mentioned here in terms of working with the student. And
Madam
I wanted
Chair,
to know
yes,
how that would work. And I really kind of resist or resent, quite frankly, when there is fiscally related questions, even though they may sound like policy. Policy often drives costs.
That's correct.
And Representative Carlson, I understand that, and I'm sorry if I offended you. We have an agenda to get through. We have a rules committee to get started.
I understand, but it wasn't me that scheduled the meeting at 8 o'clock tonight either. My follow-up question, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, is then if they are retained for the year, what happens after that then? They're retained once, and let's say they're not with all the intervention still up to the reading level. And the reason I ask that question, as most of you know, I'm a retired teacher, but I did have students who suffered from severe dyslexia. And it was very difficult to get them up to a reading level. And if you understand dyslexia, that can vary greatly in terms of the severity. The hypothetical, the student has been retained for a year and still isn't up to grade level. I want to know what happens after that.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, on page 19, as well as I can articulate this, a student can be promoted mid-year to grade 4, but otherwise I think that we are working with the School Boards Association and with the school principals and others involved in trying to, as this proposal is a work in progress, figure out some of those complications that might occur. Because you are correct in asking a question, what will happen to the student if after the first retention he or she is not reading at level? And we want to deal with that in a very sensitive way. But honestly, I have not been able to work out that issue, and I know Representative Myra continues to work on that. If indeed, you know, school districts find this to be problematic. We've not heard from them yet on that. We hope that between the parents, the teachers, those who are going to be hopefully specialists in this area will ensure that after kindergarten, first, second, and third grade, we will have no retentions. I mean, that's our goal, to have no retentions, because we've been able to figure out a system that is going to ensure that these children are reading. But again, there's always the what if, and I appreciate your question. And without Representative Myra here, I don't think I can answer exactly at this point what might happen.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Well, I think having no retentions would be just as rosy of a forecast as No Child Left Behind, every kid is going to pass all the tests by 2014. But members, I'm glad, Representative Carlson, that you brought up this section of the bill, because there's many sections in the bill, but that this one I think is the one that most relates to the Finance Committee. And you mentioned that students could be flunked once, but this bill actually they could be flunked twice, and so it becomes very expensive. We did have testimony and concerns about just how old kids are getting. I talked about what a big kid I was, and you know, there I would be my full height and I'd still be in third grade if I couldn't read. But the main thing is, like you said, not the cost. And there's the various groups, the St. Paul Public Schools, the elementary principals, the school psychologists, Parents United, the Minnesota Reading Association, all these groups came forward to testify against this, and that the research does not bear out that this is even good for kids. We already have in our statute the goal of kids being able to read by second grade, and now this puts that up to third grade, actually. And the main thing that everyone would agree on, and the governor, I carried his bill, and Representative Erickson knows I tried to amend that in instead of this section, would agree on a lot of the things that need to be done to have kids learn to read, you know, including early childhood. But to have this stick here that Jeb Bush came to tell us made some difference, but then we looked at Florida and realized they did these other things that we have in here that, that we thought were the main drivers of why some kids were doing better. So I just point out that it's expensive, but it also wasn't supported by the education groups, and that it isn't supported by research. And then we had a lot of concern about the role of the parents and the parental rights, and we've had a lot of those discussions here in the legislature. The right of parents who are homeschooling their children to pretty much have free reign. We talk about parental rights for a lot of things, but here, and we also, along with that, often focus on notification. Parents should be notified. Here, it's the buyer beware. If a school is planning, if the government is planning to retain a student, then the onus is on the parent to figure out that they may request a hearing if they know that they should and could, and if they have enough confidence. So I think that a lot of the same students who wouldn't be doing well in their reading probably have parents who aren't as able to help them as some other parents, because if they have a good reason, like special education or something, then they're exempted from this. So this would be run-of-the-mill kids who, if they'd had parents that read to them all along, maybe wouldn't be in this predicament. So how many of those parents then are going to find out that they may request this hearing? And then if they know about that and they do request it and they come, then they may in writing request that their child not be flunked, and otherwise they would be. So I think it's a pretty weak link for the rights of the parents. So I would urge that we vote no on the whole bill for a variety of reasons, but I would focus on this reason.
Mr. Chair? Or who's the chair now?
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I do want to call your attention to the fact that we have a lot of communication with parents on page 17, as I mentioned earlier about the assessments. But May, September, and whenever a teacher feels that it's necessary, there's going to be a communication to each parent of this enrolled student who is having problems in reading, proficient at whatever level it might be, whether it's kindergarten, first, second, or third grade. We also have built in some clauses on page 18. So in reference to Representative Carlson's earlier question, maybe I was amiss in not pointing out the fact that there are reasons that children will advance in spite of their inability to read proficiently at third grade level. We know that today we have students who are identified as autistic. They may have autism spectrum, or they may have autism. There are even those who have dyslexia, and there are need for professionals beyond what the classroom teacher can do to deal with some of those learning difficulties. And so on page 18, as I said earlier, there are several clauses, good clause exceptions. And I can refer you to paragraphs F on page 19. Under a good clause exception established by the district or charter school in its literacy plan, all of this designed locally, a student who does not demonstrate grade level reading proficiency on the statewide reading assessment by the end of grade 3 may be promoted to grade 4 if the student is, and then there are five reasons why the student would be promoted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just really quite amazed. This is good language. This takes care of children and parents, and the system gives flexibility. We know that a child learns to read in those first 3 years in school, and after that they read to learn. If they aren't reading at this level, the children are the ones that this calls attention to, that they need assistance. It gives all kinds of flexible language here. But the child is centered here, and so I'm just amazed that we're even going through this. I mean, it's clear in reading of the language that this is well-written, does well, gives opportunities for principals, school administrators, all kinds of people. Madam Chair, I support this, and I'm just baffled as to why even this kind of picking away at this. Thank you, Representative Erickson, for caring about the kids and putting together a good, well-balanced piece of language here.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had just intended to add a little research comment before Representative Kiffmeyer's response, but I'll just say the number of organizations that have opposed this language are solid educational advocacy groups with strong research base for opposing not the literacy provisions of this language. They are very strong and I think will well serve our students, but retention as the solution to a lack of proficiency. There are a number of other research-based models like multi-age groupings and continuous progress models that can absolutely adequately address lack of proficiency at grade level and do better in terms of not having the negative elements of that go with retention. And I even asked Governor Bush about this when he was here, and he agreed there were other models. And so I just wanted to mention that there's other research there that could be looked at in a fair way, which doesn't undermine the strength of the literacy provision here, but does give me pause for supporting the retention aspect.
Thank you, Representative Reinhart. Representative Ekin, I believe you have two amendments in the packet. They look fairly similar in nature. If you'd like to offer the one you like the best.
Yes.
All right. Which
and,
one?
Madam Chair, that would be the A30 amendment.
All right, members. Representative Ekin moves the A30 amendment. If you'd like to explain what it does.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I would like to thank Representative Erickson for putting language in for one of my communities and in my district, the Norman County West Schools, which experiences flooding on a regular basis. This year again, experiencing serious significant flooding. Something some people may not know about Representative Erickson and I, we were actually born in the same hospital up in Ada, which is right next to Norman County West.
I was a few years ahead of you.
Same time?
Not the same year, I don't think.
No, I was born quite a few years earlier than Representative Ekin, but I'm glad to claim the same birthplace.
Yeah, and by the way, that birthplace, the hospital that we were born in, is no longer there, and it's because of the flood of 97, which destroyed that hospital, and so our birthplace is now a park, but there is a new hospital that was built.
And it's
later.
A beautiful hospital.
Yes, it is.
I was there last summer.
Yes, these communities are dealing with flooding, as I said, on a regular basis, and so I was contacted by the superintendent from the school up there who was asking about help that could be given because they miss, I guess it was in 09, they missed 10 days of school, and this year they missed 5 days of school. And it comes right at the time that the state testing is taking place as well. So, it's been a real struggle for them. And the language that was put in was designed to help them, but we also put in language for floods and tornadoes, which really doesn't fit because that's not something that happens on a regular basis like flooding does. And so we, with this amendment, I take out tornadoes and flooding and also... and fires, yeah, tornadoes and fires. We take that out, and we also do change the time period and the requirement for being able to be exempted from a post-Labor Day school start so that they can start earlier in order to address the problem of losing school days when floods occur. And so that's what this is all about.
Representative Erickson, any comments to the A30 amendment?
No, Madam Chair, I'm happy to accept it. Right. I'm happy to accept the cleaned-up language. I liked it before, but it's much better now.
All right, members, any questions on the A30 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Eakin renews his motion that the A30 amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Amendments adopted. Representative Erickson, I don't see any more amendments in the packet. Are there any additional questions for the bill author? Seeing none, I will renew my
motion. Madam Chair, I would just like to insert something at this point. You know, I'm a little older, and I'm more of a traditionalist, so I had a lot of students in the 60s. And a few years ago, Bob Backlund, who became a professional wrestler, who was one of my sophomores, graduated from Princeton High School in 1968, paid me a visit and told me that he knew I knew he did not know how to read when I had him as a sophomore because I constantly worked with him. And he said, Mrs. Erickson, I just wish that you would have retained me. And I wish the teachers much earlier would have retained me. Because today, former professional wrestler Bob Backlund, state champion from Princeton, Minnesota, works for the Department of Education of the state of Connecticut, and he goes around the state teaching, reading, and emphasizing how important retention is.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I will renew my motion that House File 1381, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion's adopted. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Members, given the time and a report from the Rules Committee Administrator, we will not be hearing House File 1598. We will not be hearing House File 1597. This evening we'll proceed to House File 1097, and as time permits, we'll take up House File 1162. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1097 to be passed and move to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. And members, there's, I believe, a somewhat non-traditional fiscal note in your packet and that it's handwritten.
It's traditional.
Oh. More traditional. I'm sorry. We had a meltdown of the fiscal note system. And if you'd like to know the details, Mr. Marks can tell you. But
well, and Madam
we now have a real fiscal note, so they must have repeated
Madam
it.
Chair, Mr. Marks and Mr. Reinholtz really did triple-double duty, all that stuff, to get this done, as this bill includes the important aquatic invasive species language that we'd like to get done before opening fishing day. So, Madam Chair, maybe Mr. Marks could, I know you want to concentrate on the fiscal parts, and then Representative Rukavina has, a small amendment that deals with some school trust funds, an easement issue. So I'm not sure. I'm at your mercy, as I know we're trying to get done in time for rules.
Thank you. Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair, members, just a couple comments. We weren't able to print this in the way we normally print fiscal notes because of some problems. The cover page is a little different, but the first few pages there are not numbered, but part of them are numbered, but they're the Department of Natural Resources part of the fiscal note. Later on, the last three pages are the Pollution Control Agency portion of the fiscal note. It actually has a different bill number on it, House File 716, but that was included in this bill. We weren't able to print a consolidated fiscal note, so we have the parts in here.
Madam Chair, they're not distributed, apparently. Both sides of the aisle are lacking them.
Well, I would hope that both sides were lacking if we didn't have them, so my apologies for that. We can get a page to make copies of the...
Once you understand it wasn't me alone complaining.
I don't think there's any secret information in the fiscal notes, so...
Madam Chair,
Representative McNamara.
I did forget one very important part. If I could ask members to go... Madam Chair, I do have an oral amendment to delete two sections that do have fiscal costs that Representative Wagini has raised a question in committee... And in section 98, page 51.
Page 51,
section 98.
rulemaking moratorium and Section 99 evaluation required. I'd like make an oral amendment to delete both those sections. The fiscal note that you will get when you get it does not include these two sections. There was significant fiscal cost originally as a full-blown study. It got changed to an evaluation, but it still has just wordsmithing. There's significant cost, and the money's
right.
Not there.
Representative McNamara moves the removal of Sections 98 and 99 of House File 1097. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Those sections are removed. We do have the fiscal note being passed out. We also have a couple of Rukavina amendments. I don't know how you'd like to proceed. Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair and Representative McNamara. The first one, I think there were a few in there, but then I had these redrafted to 1097. So the First Amendment is A11-0433. And Madam Chair, I just have a correction to it on line 1.16, delete 1,202 and put 1,800 but less than. So it would be, it has a total dry weight of 1,800 but less than 2,600 pounds. And Representative McNamara and others informed me that that was...
Representative Rukavina, I heard you say less than 2,200 pounds.
Less than 2,600.
26.
So it would read 1,800 but less than 2,600 pounds. And Madam Chair and members, I had a constituent call me last Friday. He bought a 2,400 pound coupe.
Representative Rukavina, before we get going here too much, let's get this wording on your oral amendment correct. On line
1.16,
delete 1,200 and the word 2.
Yes.
The second 1,200.
Yes.
And the word 2, and insert 1,800 but less than.
Thank you, ma'am.
Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, we'll incorporate that into your amendment.
And, Madam Chair and members, and this does have a fiscal impact, Madam Chair, because these can't get licensed today because there's no way to license a vehicle of this weight. And John Deere is making a machine called the Gator and this Kubota, and I did chew this guy out for buying a Kubota, but after that, he had already bought it, and so.
And members, Representative Rukavina, I don't know if you had direct conversations with Representative Beard, but I did have an opportunity to speak with both Representative Beard, McNamara, and Hackbarth. We're going to give one to Representative Rukavina tonight. We think it's okay, but to ask that you continue to work with the department and
thank you, Madam Chair, because
for discussion purposes tonight.
These machines are being sold in Minnesota, but they can't get a license, and the gentleman can't drive it from one field to another.
All right, thank
so
you.
So it allows
any questions for Representative Rukavina on the 433 amendment? Is there anybody in the audience that wants to testify to this? Representative Dornis, did you have a question on the...
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I was glad to see Representative Rukavina mixing his Gator with my mini trucks. They're in good company. So.
There you go. Another person happy tonight, Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, my goal is to make everyone joyful.
Yep. Representative McNamara.
Well, Madam Chair, as this is Representative Rukavina's amendment is coming late, and the DNR is scurrying. It looks like they and the industry look okay, but I would like to reserve the right, Representative Rukavina, if between now and the four there's serious angst, we'll have to chat. But at this point, it looks good, Madam Chair. I will support the amendment.
Thank you, Chair McNamara. Any questions on the 433 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The 433 amendment is adopted. Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, the next amendment would be A110434. Members, I brought this up the other evening when there was a bill here and Ms. Lewis was here from the Department of Natural Resources. I have a constituent whose father
Representative Rukavina, I just want to make sure I have a 412. Does everybody else have a 434 in their packet?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Madam Chair, this
I guess they just left me out.
It was
time.
Drafted to the current bill.
All right.
And members, you know, it's frustrating at times, and some of the members on this committee have been on previous Representative Carlson's Finance Committee and others to try to get easement for constituents where there's a lot of public land. I have a constituent who has his father, and he is a young little kid, built a road into their cabin on Black Duck Lake up by Orr. They built the entire road. They maintain it every year. They're required to leave it open for the public. Loggers use it to cut down trees on state land. They're not required to fix it, even though they're told to, but they don't. And about every year, this gentleman and his family put in about $1,000 to fix this road. And now the lease just keeps going up. And it is school trust land. I'll be perfectly upfront what the amendment does. It says he's going to pay this current lease required and put the money directly in the school trust fund because, as Ms. Lewis said the other night, it goes into the forestry expense account. And it never sees the school trust, and it's going to be one time, a perpetual, unrestricted easement. It's just gone on for since 1950, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Carina. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, the DNR got thrown a curve on the time here, and they did just arrive. I'm wondering if we could just move to the fiscal note, if we could set the amendment aside for a moment, Representative Rukavina and Mr. Meyer. Mr. Meyer likes Representative Rukavina so much he wants to make it a little broader, but needs to discuss it with Representative Rukavina. It's just a minor tweak. I think it'll fit well with Representative Rukavina. If you'd be okay, Madam Chair, I think it would be probably more expedient and save time on the floor and everything.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have to talk to Mr. Meyer.
You get to talk to Mr. Meyer,
because
Representative
I'm trying to be joyful, and this may not end up being that way. So, okay, I'll
just don't know fur flies.
Madam Chair, I could send Representative Hackbart out to referee if we need to.
Where's Representative Hayden when you need him? Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker, and this was to Representative Rukavina, who just went out to have his little tea party, I guess.
Well, Representative Wagenius also had a question or comment, so if you'd like, we can go to her and come back to you. Representative Wagenius.
Madam Chair, I was going to speak on the amendment. I find it fun that Representative Rukavina wants to put all the money in the school trust fund, permanent school trust fund. That's great. But then he's giving an easement so that there isn't money to put in the school trust fund. So that seems to be contradictory to me.
Are there any other questions? On the 434 memo, we'll set that aside. If not, we'll set that aside. Are there any questions on the fiscal note related to the bill? Lovely. Okay. They better talk fast.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins, I think what we could do in order to expedite things is we could lay Representative McNamara's bill on the table temporarily.
Well, the other somebody here can answer it.
Okay. Representative Biskins.
Thank you. Representative Rukavina, help me understand on your amendment on line 8. Why is there a termination date of December 31st, 2015, if you are looking for a perpetual unrestricted easement? I don't know what I'm missing.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, there's one more current payment that he has to pay from the 2011 to 2015, and so maybe that's the way it was drafted by Ms. Maxwell. Because I said, let's have him pay it one more time, but have it paid directly into the school trust instead of the forestry expense suspense account, where none of it gets to the school trust. And so that's probably the reason for it. He'll pay this lease, and then it will be an unrestricted easement. But Mr. Myers and Mr. McNamara, Representative McNamara, are going to help me clean it up, and maybe we'll do it for all the easements they have, which now very little of the money reaches the school trust.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if if staff could bear with me, we'd like to delete lines 1.5 through 1.10. And then on line 1.12, it would read fees. We'd add an S to the word fee. Then farther down in the line, delete the words a lease described under paragraph parentheses A parentheses and insert an easement. So line 112 would now read 100% of the fees paid by a lessee for an easement must be. It makes the language, I think, more broad, and it removes the section that specifically dealt with only one situation or potentially only a few situations. And if staff doesn't have it, I do have the written copy also.
Representative Rukavina, would you like to incorporate those changes into your
amendment? Madam Chair, I will for the time being, which doesn't take care of my constituent, but I'm trusting Mr. Myers. I know that Representative McNamara will help me, so I'll accept that. And to the members on the committee, this does actually put some money in the school trust instead of into
all right,
the
I guess, Ms. Novak, do you have a comment? Or maybe we're making a mistake here.
Madam Chair, I don't have a comment on the advisability, but this seems to be putting something permanently. This is a permanent situation now, and it's only in session law, so my recommendation would be that it would be coded. And I'm uncertain right now what the coding would be, but the reviser could assign coding to it.
Madam Chair, if staff
Representative Rukavina,
if staff could get that information for us, so when we do it on the floor, we'll have the correct amendment correction and put it in statute. Instead
so, Representative Rukavina, do you want to withdraw this amendment at this time, or
No, I think we can take care of it.
So we'll be looking forward to a technical change to clean it up on the floor. Is that
yes,
what you're saying,
Madam okay. Chair? Yeah.
All right. Representative McNamara, are you agreeable to that?
Yes,
as well?
I would say that's the best plan, Madam Chair.
All right. Members, we have the 434 amendment as amended in front of us. Are there any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Rukavina renews his motion for the 434 amendment to be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Oh, motion's adopted.
Madam Chair, thank you so much.
Any other amendments or questions on the McNamara policy bill? Seeing none, Representative Wagenius.
Well, I since you're moving for a vote, Madam Chair, I would just comment that I appreciate Representative McNamara taking out the water moratorium because I think for lots of reasons, and he can guess why. I am still very troubled by the language in the bill that takes away Minnesota citizens' property rights, and for that reason, I can't vote for the bill. But that's hopefully something we can work out later.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative McNamara, would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to renew my motion that House File 1097 be passed and move to the general register.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
No.
Motion passes. The bill is on its way to the general register. Thank you, Representative McNamara. Representative Ward in the room.
Oh, that's why he's here. No,
but Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
I'll move the bill.
Representative Abler moves House File 1162. Members, the language in this particular standalone bill was contained in its entirety in the McNamara bill. We've done a number of these this session where we've had omnibus and standalone bills move at the same time. So if anybody has any questions for Representative Ward, he's patiently waited this evening. I'm sure he's ready to answer any burning questions you might have on his bill. Seeing none, Representative Abler will renew his motion that House File 1162 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. Thank you.
Members, I don't believe there's any other business to come before the committee this evening, so the committee is adjourned, and I think rules is reconvening here very shortly. So we're adjourned.